It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this episode of Senior Talk. Parkinson's disease is often misunderstood as just tremors, but it's actually a very complex, progressive neurological condition that impacts movement, cognition, and function. It's staggering to think about, but nearly a million people in the U.S. are living with Parkinson's right now, with about 90,000 new diagnoses each year. My guest is Lisa DeWeese. She's an occupational therapist and regional director of outpatient operations with Preferred Therapy Outpatient and Wellness. Thank you, Lisa, so much for being here today. I really appreciate it to discuss Parkinson's disease. Talk to me about it. It is more than tremors. What is Parkinson's disease?
Parkinson's disease is a dopamine loss in the brain is what actually causes it. So scientifically, that's where it stems from. As you said, most people think of it just as the tremors, but really it affects the whole person.
So if it's a dopamine loss, is there any way to get that dopamine back? I mean, if people, can they take supplements? Is there a way to do that and kind of fix that?
Yeah, unfortunately not. Dopamine produces neurons in the brain. So once we stop or we lost the dopamine, we actually stop producing neurons that control movement. They control our emotional regulation and they control our motivation. So as dopamine's level decrease as patients age, we have the noted increased difficulty in the movement and the coordination, but also a whole other host of signs and symptoms that you might not recognize as Parkinson's.
Okay, well, since you started that, let's get into that. Is tremor the first thing that someone would notice, or is that more of a progression? What's the first thing someone would look at?
I think early symptoms are often very subtle and often missed. Loss of smell is a big early sign. Handwriting size getting smaller and smaller as we lose that motor control. Sleep disturbances are often noted. People start talking in a very soft voice. They don't realize that their volume is decreasing. We notice those four signs and symptoms early on before we notice the bradykinesia, which is the rigidity and the postural changes and the tremor.
So when you say, bradykinesia and rigidity, what does that look like?
It looks like very stiff movement in the individual.
Okay. So I know that age is a primary risk factor. Any of these symptoms, if someone is listening and they have some of these symptoms, I don't want them to go into a panic that they may have Parkinson's. What should they do?
Obviously, talk to their physician first and foremost. The internet is a great tool and an awful tool at the same time. We can all be Google MD, but we get a lot of false information. So running to the internet is not the best idea. Talking to your physician or talking to a therapist who's trained in Parkinson's would be the better option. Just because these people can separate the reality from myth. And we can look at the symptoms, not individually, but as a group of symptoms to kind of decide whether or not we think this is going in the Parkinson's direction or somewhere else.
Because some of those symptoms may be just aging.
Absolutely.
And talking in a softer voice, maybe the person's partner may think that they're having hearing loss themselves because they can't hear what the person is saying when actually they are speaking more softly.
Right. Yes. So some of the other signs that we notice are GI slowing and constipation. We look at blood pressure instability over the course of the last few months. There might be some respiratory limitations, and there could be fatigue and endurance issues. So again, all normal signs of aging as well.
Is there a specific test for Parkinson's, or is it just kind of like Alzheimer's? You're ruling out a lot of things and bringing it together.
Exactly. You're kind of ruling out some of the more identifiable disease processes and bringing together the group of symptoms, both underlying symptoms and observable symptoms, to come up with that diagnosis.
How risky are genetics? If your parent had it or your grandparent had it, what's the genetic component?
Genetics play about a 10 to 15% part in risk factor. Some other risk factors that we might not know right off the bat are exposures to pesticides over a long period of time, some metals, and air pollution. So all those things, you know, are part of a very thorough history, a medical history, that could then lead the physician or the primary care provider to that diagnosis.
I was looking at some ingredients, or a story about ingredients in protein powders, and Consumer Reports had done one that said there are significant amounts of lead in a lot of the protein powders. And I think that some of the things that we eat probably do have heavy metals in them, and we would have no idea. We think we're being healthy, and pesticides too.
Right.
I read a report years ago that scientists had taken just standard grapes from the grocery store, and there were 119 different chemicals on that grape.
Scary.
Over time, that has to impact our bodies.
Absolutely. It's very cumulative. And it makes the point for buying, or, you know, buying organic foods or growing your own, which is, those are both very expensive options for seniors.
They are. Food in general has gone to ridiculous levels. And I'm not sure that anyone could be having a garden to grow everything that you would need.
Right.
There's really no telling who will get this. It's not a definitive, if you have the gene, you're going to get it. It's just kind of age and maybe luck of the draw. How does Parkinson's impact the family, say the husband or wife or children?
Well, I think safety is always the biggest area.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, with Parkinson's, you get that rigidity and you get the change in movement. We also get what's called a festering gait, which, if you watch somebody with advanced Parkinson's, they start to move slowly and then they lose the regulation. So they start to speed up and they'll walk into walls. They'll walk into furniture and can do some damage to fragile bones. You know, very, very painful injuries and very frequent injuries because they can't control their movement. I think, you know, just looking at more of the subtle symptoms, if you lose your smell, you oftentimes lose your sense of taste. So, you know, those dishes that your spouse of 50 years has been cooking that are your favorites all of a sudden become non-palatable and cause a little rift there. You know, we can look at all these real subtle kind of changes and how they affect somebody's relationship. And that relationship is often, you know, the caregiver.
If someone loses their sense of smell and therefore their sense of taste, is there a danger of becoming malnourished because they don't want to eat? And that exacerbates everything.
Yes. Yep. You know, we look at sleep disturbances. You have couples that have been married for 40 or 50 years now, all of a sudden having to sleep in different rooms. Or, you know, even more concerning is the husband or the wife worried about the safety of the person who's having the sleep disturbances. So they now are also up, and we all know if we don't get enough sleep, we get cranky. And the last thing we want to do is be cranky as a caregiver.
Because that is a huge job and a challenging job. It's very difficult, especially if you compound the fear on top of it, because I'm sure the partners of someone who is having these symptoms is probably terrified.
Of course.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk more about Parkinson's with Lisa Dewey. So stay with us. We'll be back right after this. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk discussing Parkinson's disease with Lisa DeWeese, an occupational therapist with Preferred Therapy Outpatient and Wellness. Lisa, if someone is having these, first of all, if someone's having these, I'm sure you recommend any of these symptoms we talked about, go to a doctor, don't be afraid, because they're not going to go away on their own. And as with most things, I'm going to assume early intervention is key.
It is with everything.
So if they are feeling having any of these, because it could be nothing, but if it is something, you want to find out right away. So what is that first visit like when you enter into your provider's office with this host of lower voice, small handwriting, no sense of smell, some of the more subtle early warning signs? What is that appointment like?
Sure. So, you know, like we already established, there's really no definitive blood test or imaging that's going to confirm this. So it's all about being open and honest with your provider and working with them to get a detailed medical history. So we're going to look at onset of the symptoms. So when did it all start? We are going to discuss those subtle changes, loss of smell, sleep issues, constipation, voice changes, and look at the progression over time. This is really critical because Parkinson's develops gradually. It doesn't come all at once.
So let's talk about that for a second. So if someone has it, if you have these and you go to the doctor, it doesn't mean that in 2 years you're going to be in full-blown Parkinson's and not be able to eat, correct?
No.
So let's talk about the time frame. And I know it's different for everyone, but how slow is this progression?
I don't think there's a great cookie-cutter answer for that. I think it all depends on diet, lifestyle, and history. You know, you can have mild tremors for years and years and years, or you can know one of your neighbors who developed a tremor at last year's picnic, and this, you know, this week you see that festering gait and walking into things. I think there's just so many factors that can play into that timeline that there's not a great answer for that.
But the key would be, though, to talk to your doctor and be honest with your doctor.
Yep. The doctor's going to look at the bradykinesia, which is the slow movements, the difficulty initiating movements. They are going to look for at least one of the following things: a resting tremor, rigidity, or postural instability.
And what does that mean? Not able to stand up straight or to
balance.
Okay.
Yep. We're going to look at how you walk. We're going to look at the arm swing. Do you have a typical arm swing of somebody that's walking in a straight line? We're going to look at your posture. We're also going to look at your facial expressions, because, you know, that rigidity doesn't just affect your legs. It affects all your muscles. So if you have a little bit of a masked appearance, that tells us a lot. And your ability to perform rapid movements is affected. So we can look at putting your hands up and down on your lap repetitively and quickly, and see if that's been affected at all.
You said diet and lifestyle could play a role. What does that mean? Is it you should exercise more, maybe eat more fruits and vegetables, try to get organic if you can afford it? What does that look like?
Really, all of those things, eating organic, making that change at any point in your life is healthy. It's not going to undo the heavy metals that have accumulated in your body to date. But movement routines and consistent movement are definitely things that need to be considered when trying to mitigate the effects of the Parkinson's. There's also a program out there called LVST Big, which many therapists are trained in. And the whole concept of that method is big movements. So if I am a therapist working with you and you have Parkinson's and you're taking little tiny steps, I might suggest that we take a walk, but we're going to march like we're in a marching band. Because to me, I exaggerate the step and it's a great big march. To that person who has Parkinson's, it might get them to move their foot 12 inches.
Okay. And so does that just increase muscle strength or slow the progression?
It
just makes
really
it easier for them to live?
Conceptually, it teaches them how to move more fluidly and productively throughout the day.
Is that in your role as an occupational therapist? Is that what you do when you have, let's say you have someone with Parkinson's? What is your role? Obviously, you can't cure the disease. You can't really slow the progression, maybe. But what is it that you do for them, I'm sure, to improve their quality of life?
Yeah. So first and foremost, we look at safety. We look at those festering movements and the speed and the banging into things and work on gait and balance and fall prevention first and foremost. We then move to your activities of daily living. So are things like the rigidity and the tremors causing you the inability to care for yourself or your responsibilities throughout the day? And if so, what types of modifications can we employ? Do we look at adaptive equipment? Do we look at task modification to make it so that you can complete the task? Or do we look at educating the person and the caregiver about why this task might not be something that you can do safely any longer? We look at how ways to keep you independent as long as we can. We look at your voice, your projection, and do education on how that's perceived. We look at swallowing issues, if there's rigidity in the muscles that affect swallowing and the movement of the food. We look at those kind of issues, and we look at improved communication so that there's not a lot of stress between family members.
What kind of success have you had employing these mechanisms with someone who has come to you with this? Is it, if they are kind of dedicated and very compliant doing what you're telling them to do, do you see the big difference that it actually makes? Or maybe they are less rigid, or they, or can find a workaround for that?
I think in a nutshell, we find three things. We are able to keep people in their homes longer because now they're able to do more tasks safely. We reduce the amount that they visit the hospital for these symptoms because now they are educated and they understand what's happening. And we improve their overall quality of life because if they're not banging into furniture or they are able to do the tasks that they've identified as important to them, then their quality of life improves.
And we want to say activities of daily living, most of you probably know, but those are the ADLs are, that's what that means. So dressing, feeding yourself, bathing, those kinds of things would be considered activities of daily living, which an occupational therapist would help you deal with. We're taking a quick break. When we come back, we will discuss more about Parkinson's. So stay with us. We'll be right back right after this. Much more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk discussing Parkinson's. Lisa, what do you wish, if you could wave a magic wand, what do you wish more people really understood about the emotional or mental health challenges that come with this diagnosis, even like from the day someone gets diagnosed and what they go through to coming to grips with this is a disease that they're going to now live with?
I think that it's important for everybody to understand that the progression varies widely, and no two people with Parkinson's can look the same. So we've already mentioned, you know, the tremor, the slowed movement, the fatigue, cognitive slowing, anxiety and depression plays a big part of it. There's blood pressure changes, there's sleep disruption. Changes in motivation and mood are neurological and not just emotional reaction. So it's easy for a caregiver or onlooker to say, could you just please get up and XYZ, which because we have a dopamine drop and a decrease in motivation that's on the neurological level, it's not easy for the person that's been diagnosed with Parkinson's to do that.
What do you see as barriers for people? I know that finding providers and finding specialists is challenging in the best of circumstances. In heavily populated states, it's still hard. But in Maine, we seem to have a shortage of all kinds of providers. What are the barriers to someone who may need, and I'm guessing there are a number of therapists, you want a physical therapist and a speech therapist and an occupational therapist. What are you seeing? How are people getting the treatment that they need?
Yeah, well, geography is definitely an obstacle in our state. There's no getting around that. And the lack of specialists is also a pain point in the state of Maine. We, as a practice, we staff all across the state, and where we can't staff, we have strong telehealth programs. So we can log on and do a lot of our education and treatment with a caregiver and with the patient via telehealth. You know, in the early stages of Parkinson's, there's still that ability for this person to interact with me on a computer screen and to understand the education I'm providing, to understand the exercises that I'm demonstrating. As it progresses, we might need to pull in a caregiver to just make sure there's enough follow through. But telehealth is definitely a viable option when we're challenged in those means. I think transportation is a huge obstacle in our state, which is why our model as a company of the Part B services at home, the rehab in the home, even though you're not homebound, is a very good option. You know, these people are still living their lives. They don't necessarily qualify for the home services that we're all familiar with because they're not actually homebound. So bringing the outpatient model to the home without that constraint is very helpful.
Are advances being made every day to help cure this disease that you see? I think of Michael J. Fox's foundation, and is there any hope on the horizon that you're aware of?
I never want to say no.
No.
You know, and there are huge organizations like that putting in a lot of time and money and effort into finding a cure. At this point, I think we are still at the point where we're treating symptoms and making life more pleasant. You know, once we have these symptoms, and making life more enjoyable so that the quality of the years you have left matter more.
Well, I think that's a huge win, actually. I want to talk about, before we're out of time, because you are really have a lot of offices. I want to tell me a little bit about Preferred Therapy Outpatient and Wellness and what you do and where you are, and give me the website before we're out of time.
So Preferred Therapy Outpatient and Wellness actually is a offshoot of a larger sister company that does skilled care in Maine. What our mission is in the state of Maine is to deliver those outpatient services to senior living communities and homes across the state. We currently have therapists from end to end in the state of Maine, out to the coasts. When we can, we'll go on to some of the islands. We really value bringing those services to some of the areas where you might not find them otherwise.
How could someone reach you if they're interested in engaging your services?
The easiest way is by phone. That number is 959-599-8171. We also do have a website, which is, I'm going to look it up myself because I don't want to say it wrong.
While you're looking that up, I will give the number again. Area code 959, then 599-8171.
Yes.
959-599-8171 is the is that toll free? I'm assuming it is, but
it is not. I do have a toll free number though, which is 860-610-0400.
Okay. And the website quickly?
It's preftherapy.com. So preftherapy.com.
preftherapy.com. Lisa DeWeese, thank you so much for this information. The toll-free number again is 860-610-0400. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thank you so much for listening.